morning, you're welcome to Galway Talks with John Morley. A reminder as well, today we're giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to one of the Corch Festival, and today it's the turn of the Black and Irish event, which is taking place on Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning or at 2:30 in the afternoon in the Town Hall. So stay tuned to be in with a chance of wearing a pair of tickets for that, because the Corch Festival runs this week with 6 days of poetry, fiction and conversation at the Corch International Festival of Literature, Galway, until Sunday the 28th. Featuring Booker Prize winner Paul Lynch, renowned authors and acclaimed poets. Experience Faber Academy workshops, Irish language and children's events. Don't miss John Banville, Paul Murray, Adele Coffey, Elaine Feeney, Rita Ann Higgins, Lemon Sissé and many more in Galway this April. Book online now on corch.ie. You're very welcome into the programme today. You might have heard of our news bulletins as well, but there's welcome news in terms of the Tuam bypass closure. I can tell you, we have a video up on all our social media channels. It's gone viral of the traffic in the Tuam and surrounding areas. And there's good news in terms of the bypass will be open for rush hour this evening between 4 and 7. It'll be closed again to finish off works and should be fully reopened again tomorrow. But we'll keep you up to date on that as we get more information from the engineers locally as well. Now, though, you're very welcome into today's programme. And the first issue we want to look at, and you might have heard it there as I was going through the headlines of what's coming up today, because Galway-based star Ollie Turner is sharing his heart failure diagnosis in a bid to raise awareness. It's part of this hashtag Bump Up The Pump campaign, which should be taking place next week during European Heart Failure Awareness Week. And it's being led by the team in the Irish Association of Heart Failure Nurses. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by Ollie Turner, but also by Emer Burke, who is a PRO of the Irish Association of Heart Failure Nurses here in Galway. You're both very welcome into studio today. And Emer, I'll start with you first. Tell us about this campaign.
I'm here today representing the Irish Association of Heart Failure Nurses Bump Up The Pump campaign. And I'm here today to talk about heart failure, which is a often little understood or misunderstood condition, which can affect one in five of us in our lifetimes. And heart failure is a condition where the heart does not pump sufficient blood to meet the needs of the body. A lot of people feel that heart failure might mean that the heart has failed or it's about to stop. That is indeed not the case. There is great treatment out there, and the focus of our campaign is to raise awareness about the risk factors for heart failure, the signs and symptoms, and to know what to do if you do present with the signs and symptoms, to seek help and get diagnosed earlier, because earlier diagnosis can improve outcomes for this condition.
What are the signs and symptoms of it?
So the main signs and symptoms of heart failure are breathlessness on exertion or at rest, fatigue and leg swelling. They'd be the predominant signs and symptoms. But there can be other signs and symptoms, such as inability to lie flat in bed at night, needing extra pillows, waking up gasping for air. The swelling associated with heart failure can also affect the abdomen as well. So you might feel a sense of fullness in the tummy, a loss of appetite. And they're the main symptoms. Breathlessness, leg swelling and fatigue would be the key ones.
Okay, our very own Ollie Turner is one of your ambassadors for this campaign. Ollie, good morning. Talk to us about your journey.
It started last May 27th, John, would you believe? It's coming up on nearly a year.
Wow.
And look, no more than every man in Ireland, you know, you think there's something wrong and you just kind of say, Ari, I'll get well, I'll be okay. So what was wrong with me? Well, it's a lot of what Emer has just described. You know, it's those tracks on your legs when you take off your socks and you're wondering, what's that about?
Mm.
It's the breathlessness when you're playing golf and just not maybe able to keep up with the lads that you're playing with. But mostly for me, it was lying in bed at night and just feeling this horrible unease, this inability to go to sleep. And, you know, I had a couple of consultations about that. I was told I was down to stress, you know, just you need to relax, take it easy, get your mind off it, go for walks. But it persisted. And it was only ultimately when I got an ECG and a reading of the heart that it showed that there was an issue there with, as in my case, it was atrial fibrillation, which is just an irregular heartbeat. But it was causing difficulty on my day-to-day life. There's no question about it. But that was the inability to get sleep at night, and that horrible, uneasy feeling was the main thing that manifested itself. And I suppose from there, it was a roller coaster from Westock of a Sunday to suddenly being admitted into UHG, being in a ward of 30 lads of varying ages, but I was the youngest by far. And then being admitted under Dr. Brian Hines, and spent 3 days in there, you know, was put onto medication, and suddenly I started to feel better. And I could see that there was a pathway here to coming out the other side and getting a successful outcome, as Emer has said. And thankfully, nearly a year on, I'm much better now. Now, Emer will talk more about the, I suppose, what I've gone through in terms of, you know, working under Dr. John Barton subsequently, and what they've done in terms of cardioversions and a cardioablation. These are all words that I wouldn't have known what they meant, and procedures that I had no idea what was involved until you're there and going through it. But when you're told that there's something wrong with your heart, that's when the area really goes up, because that's when worry kicks in, and that's when you start. I mean, I remember the first time I saw Emer out in Merlin Park come out and see me, and like, as you can see here, John, she's a very pleasant, approachable lady, an awfully woman living in Tuam. We won't hold that against her. But on her door is Emer Burke, heart failure nurse. And I'm kind of going, am I at the right person here? Like, talk about a description that really hits home, isn't it, Emer? Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, we're not the Grim Reaper. Heart failure nurses are there to support patients who are going through this journey. And, you know, I think a better term would be heart support nurse, you know.
Okay, we'll change that slightly.
Yeah, we'll change that. We'll change that,
but,
Ollie.
But the treatments that Ollie went through, Emer, just talk us through those.
Sure. Well, first of all, in order to be diagnosed in the first place, Ollie would have had a blood test called NT-proBNP. And this blood test is available through primary care. So the first port of call would be to attend your GP if you're experiencing any symptoms of heart failure, such as the breathlessness, the fatigue, the leg swelling. A blood test would have been done, an ECG. In Ollie's case, that detected an irregularity of the heart rhythm. Now, not all patients with heart failure will have irregularities of their heart rhythm. But that was just in Ollie's individual circumstance. Then Ollie was admitted to UHG, and he would have been treated under the care of our colleagues in cardiology with medications that helped to support the removal of fluid called diuretics. And also he would have been put on treatment. There's medications that have been proven to be very effective to improve symptoms, to improve quality of life, and to improve life expectancy for patients that are diagnosed with heart failure. Some of those treatments would be things, drugs such as beta blockers. A lot of patients will be on beta blockers. Drugs like boysoprolol. Ramipril is another medication, ACE inhibitor, and there's various others that Ollie would have been on. And steadily over the course of about 3 months, I would have worked with Ollie to optimise the doses of those medications. And Ollie did very well, I have to say. He was a gold star student. But the other aspects of, aside from medications, I suppose, that we must stress are lifestyle changes. And Ollie was very, very good for coming along with us. And it's a real partnership between the nurse and the patient, I suppose. We can only advise, but the patient has to live that life and go out and do the exercise and eat healthily, restrict alcohol, low salt diet. These would all be aspects of heart failure day-to-day care, measuring your weight every morning, looking for signs of fluid, reporting and acting on that, getting in touch with your heart failure nurse or your GP to let them know that you feel that the symptoms might be worsening, so that we can act soon to prevent a crisis and prevent a patient winding up back in hospital.
Well, I was the model pupil, wasn't I,
you
in
were,
that sense?
Ollie,
because
yeah.
I suppose, John, when you're backed into a corner, what do you do? You know, do you want to live or what do you want to be the outcome? So I had no issue, so no caffeine, so the coffee is gone, which is, you know, wasn't a big issue for me. You know, you'd have, out of habit, you'd have a couple of cups in the morning, but that was obviously causing palpitations. The alcohol is gone since last May. Again, I don't miss it. And people always keep asking you, you know, how do you not miss it? Like, I said, no, like, I'll have a bottle of Heineken Zero. It's the same difference to me.
Yeah.
But the most thing was the exercise and watching the weight each morning. And it was like a constant competition to make sure that it was going the right direction. Sometimes there'd be a hiccup, which is natural. At the weekend, you'd have a Chinese or you'd have a birthday party and maybe you'd have a bit too much cake and there'd be 1 or 2 pounds up. And you say, okay, we'll work hard to get that back down. And that's important because you're looking to create a better scenario and a better outcome. Mm. My heart function, John, was down to 25%.
Wow.
So when I heard that number, I was kind of going, okay, this is backs to the wall job here, Ollie. And in fairness with Emer, she was very encouraging all the way along. The other aspect of this, Emer had laughed as well, was cardio rehab. So I had to go into the Merlin Park area where they have a gymnasium set up for cardiac patients to go and do the rehab. So again, I would have been the youngest athlete in there of those doing the cardiac rehab. But it's like a circuit, but it's great crack. But I do have to say, Emer, I have one major issue. They've only one CD in there. And it's the soundtrack to Forrest Gump. And it was like Guantanamo Bay, listening to these same 60s songs over and over again as you're doing the exercise. And the lads are having a good laugh over it, weren't they?
We'll have to bring your feedback and maybe Galway Bay can support our library.
But in fairness to the team there, to John and the guys down there, they're absolutely brilliant too. And that's all part of the process as well, John. You know, it's an overview of life. But to get the chance, I'm one of the lucky ones.
Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is that there are many, many people out there that don't even realise that they're at risk of heart failure or that they actually may have heart failure. Mm. The type of people who may be at risk would be anybody who's maybe had a heart attack, any damage to the heart. So a heart attack, anyone with leaky valves, people with a chronic history of uncontrolled or poorly controlled high blood pressure. There are also other ailments that can cause heart failure. Things like diabetes. If you're a diabetic, you have a four times, a multiplied by four chance of developing heart failure. So it's important to pay attention to those signs and symptoms and to ask your GP, you know, if you do have these symptoms, could I have heart failure? The GP can do that blood test, NT-proBNP and an ECG, and refer you on to a specialist for an echocardiogram, which is a special ultrasound of the heart. Ollie mentioned there that his heart function was 25%. That basically is a calculation of the amount of blood that's ejected by the heart every time it beats. A normal ejection fraction is what we call it, is 50%. So Ollie's was about half of what it should have been. But thankfully, with the treatment, Ollie has succeeded.
Back up to full capacity.
Yeah. So you can live well once you get diagnosed early and you're put on treatment as soon as possible.
Bottom line is here, John. You just have to go and get something done about it. The bloods are the obvious thing. But for anyone out there that's running and racing, which we all are in life, we're all busy, you know, flying around in the car, going here, there and everywhere, popping into the garage, getting fast food, whatever you can do just to keep things going. That's where, unbeknownst to us, things build up. And no one wants to admit there could be something wrong with your heart. But I'm telling you, there's a lot of people out there at the moment. And if they're listening to this, just get to your GP, get that blood test done, and it might just get you back on the right track.
Was that a problem for you, Alex? I know your lifestyle in terms of the drama and commentating on the weekends, it lends itself to being that
frantic. Of course
frantic.
It does. And I have slowed down something serious because you have to. You've got to take charge of it. And even, I have to say, the guys here in Galway Bay FM, Cormac and Johnny and all the team yourselves, they've been very, very supportive in this as well. And like, it's really important that, you know, you've got to have a right balance in life as well between, you know, getting out and enjoying your family, enjoying sports or whatever you're into as well, going to matches, playing a bit of golf as I do, a pastime like drama, which I really enjoy as well, work, which is, you know, fundamental to everybody's life as well, and just, you know, bringing all that balance there, but not to get too carried away by, you know, saying yes to everything. You know, sometimes you need to take stock of what's really important.
Emer, final word to you. I know that some 30% of people living with heart failure have no obvious symptoms. Is the message just for everyone, if you're unsure, get checked?
I think the message is, if you feel you're at risk, if you're in that category of risk where you've uncontrolled high blood pressure, diabetes, history of heart attack, or any history in your family of sudden cardiac death or any kind of problem with the heart muscle, if you know, if you're aware of that in your family, do inquire and get your regular health checks. If you have symptoms, then definitely definitely go to the GP and ask, could I have heart failure? There is a simple blood test that can be done, which can alert the GP to refer on if needed. The important thing is to act and not sit on symptoms. Mm. We'll be running some awareness stands across hospitals across Ireland next week as part of European Heart Failure Awareness Week. And, you know, just if you're looking for further information on heart failure, that's available on the CREA website, has some really good information, www.cree.ie. Irish Heart Foundation is irishheart.ie. And there's also a really good website, heartfailurematters.org, which is the European website for patient resources. So if you're unsure, have a look at those websites, inform yourself and act if you have symptoms or concerns.
Okay. Ollie Turner and Eimear Burke, the PRO of the Irish Association of Heart Failure Nurses, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks. What do you think of that? Get your texts and WhatsApps into us on 086-383-553. You can phone reception on 091-77-0077 and email comments at goibfm.ie. Good morning, John. Just listening to Ollie talking about his heart issues. I know what he's talking about. I was diagnosed 5 years ago with heart failure. Mine is genetic. I also am a lucky one. The cardiac nurses in the rehab are brilliant. The shock you get when getting diagnosed is just the biggest blow ever. And I'm glad to hear that Ollie is doing well. Keep strong. That comes in from one of our listeners. Someone else says that Ollie is a wonderful patient in terms of following the advice of the medical team and setting an example as well. The big thing there is if you have any symptoms whatsoever and you're unsure, do get checked and go to cree.ie or heartfailure.org as well and get more information from there. We're coming back and we're looking at a big debate on the issue of rural housing. Should it be clustered together or should it be dispersed? Have your say now.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavay Road. A new way to car shop.
Good morning, you listen to Galway Talks with John Morley and we're looking now at the issue of rural housing. Should it be clustered together or should we allow housing to be dispersed throughout the countryside? To discuss this further, I'm joined by Green Party councillor, Councillor Alistair McKinstry, and Independent councillor, Councillor Tomás O'Curran. You're both very welcome onto Galway Talks and I'll go to you, Councillor McKinstry, first. Talk to me about the meeting that was had on Monday. You raised the issue of sustainable rural housing and you've argued that one-off rural housing is unsustainable.
Dispersed housing is basically unsustainable because we end up spending so much of our work and the money maintaining the infrastructure from that. So we spent our first half of the meeting on Monday basically arguing potholes. Why couldn't we build up the roads to maintain potholes, etc.? The answer to that basically is in Ireland we have three times as much roads as anyone else in Europe per person. And we, all of those roads need to be then maintained. We have 2.5 times more cables for electricity, twice as much water pipes under the roads. And all of that, we basically spend all of our council money and time maintaining all of that infrastructure rather than building new houses. We should be able to build. And everybody should be able to live in a rural area in a sustainable way. And I argue basically that we should be doing serviced sites in our local town, villages and hamlets around the country to make those small communities sustainable, where we have primary schools in Tullycaine, in Roscarl, etc. We should say the council should prepare 20, 30 houses, sites and so on. This is where you can build. Everybody can still live in their community where they grew up. But we can manage this, we can support this without having to build so much infrastructure. And that way we can afford to supply the services correctly. Mm. I've had the officials in the council explain, yes, you can get a rural need, but if you're in if you live in a rural area, you shouldn't be expecting broadband, you shouldn't be expecting buses, etc. And that's wrong. We should have, if we build correctly, we can supply those services to rural people.
Okay, so what are you looking to do? Are you looking to zone rural areas into where you can have residential or not, or what are you looking for?
An example of this is in play elsewhere in the world, but also locally, in Kildare, for example, they've done serviced sites, 10, 15, or a dozen houses. So that if you go to a small community close to a school, the council will have sites where you can build your house, where you can come together as a small co-op, for example, and build 10 houses. to the style that you want, supporting your group. So keeping the local school alive, but the infrastructure and the roads needed are smaller, so it doesn't cost as much, and we can actually put, you know, we can live there. At the moment, we have the worst of both worlds. It costs us a lot more for the builder to for the local person to live in an area, and then we can't afford the. We have sky high electricity prices, broadband prices, water prices compared to everyone else, because all we end up doing is maintaining the infrastructure.
Okay, but how do we actually put that into place? Do we make it harder for people to get planning in dispersed areas? Do we zone the land? What actual ways do we do this?
We're supposed to be doing that now.
Why aren't we?
Okay, in our county development plan, we overrules the counting of the number of one-off houses that we supply. There will always be a need for one-off houses, but that needs to be a small number so that we can afford to maintain those houses with the proper services. Instead, we've decided not to count them, and we will essentially allow a one-off house wherever.
Okay, we're also joined by Councillor Tomás O'Curran. Tomás, what have you made of what you've heard so far?
Well, John, thanks for having us on the thing, and I should have told you at the start, I'm not independent, I'm Republican Sinn Féin. So,
apologies.
No, you didn't know. I should have probably told you at the start. It's like this. Well, I raised this at the meeting on Monday, and in my canvas and in the stage of my life, I find that the big issue at the doors that I was at so far, from Berne to Kearney out, is, and Bushy Park onward, the big problem is that people cannot get planning for their family on their own land. Now, people want to live near their parents. They want to live where they were brought up. They want to live in rural Ireland. So, I, with all the greatest respect in the world for Alistair, I don't believe that we can do what they want to do and what Europe and Dublin wants to do, push people into towns and villages and leave the rural areas in a wilderness. And that's what it's headed. If you take west of Berne, from Furabah out, Spiddle, especially Carrow, where you had loads of factories one time. Mm. You had rows of factories in Rossmuck. They're all closed down. We have Udras na Gaeltacht there and Rinn na Gaeltacht there. And only for that we'd have nothing. And like they're talking about promoting the Irish language, this, that and the other. And if people are moved away from their areas, which they are at the moment, if there are, all the young Irish people are heading for foreign countries. I done it myself, but I came back. And if we want to progress in rural areas, we must keep our youth in it. And they cannot stay, because if they're not getting planning. And then the price of the houses, to build a house, and you might have to apply for planning two or three times.
In fairness, Councillor McKinstry, he's not saying that people can't live in rural areas. What he's saying is we can't have them dispersed over a wide area where it's not suitable for people to be living, and that we should have people, if we want to give them all the services they can and do it in a cost-effective way, they need to be bunched in together in, we'll say, towns like Spittle, towns like Berne, and keep it like that rather than dispersing it out over a huge, vast area, which is going to put the cost of everything up, whether that be broadband, water supply, etc., etc.
I don't think, John, with respect, the cost should come into it. What I'm saying is, what we had, we should keep. And we've been let down by successive governments since we went into Europe in 1973. The fishing is gone. Galway Bay, the west coast of Ireland, the finest fisheries in the world. Who is benefiting from it? Mm. Only boats coming down from Portugal and other places.
Well, let's keep it to the
yeah,
issue
I am
that we're
keeping it. But that it was the people's living. People were fishing. I remember herrings coming into Galway. The spin-off that was off that.
But we're on about housing now, Councillor.
Well, if you don't have the work as well, you can't have the people. I don't agree that we go in to towns and villages. I don't agree with it at all. I done it myself when I was away. People want to live in their own area where they were brought up beside their parents.
But to do so in a way that works is the issue here. Councillor McKinstry is on about having sustainable rural housing. He's not saying don't have any houses in rural Ireland, but do it in a sustainable way that actually works in practice. And that's good for nature, biodiversity, etc.
Well, people that want to move into towns or villages are free to do so. But it's the right of the people that don't want to go into towns or villages to go and live where they were born. And that's my argument with it. And I stand by that, and I will stand by it.
Councillor McKinstry, I'll give you a chance to reply there. What have you made? Do people, should they have the right to live wherever they want?
They should be able to live in the community. We should look around our local communities, and you know, within 2 or 3 kilometres of where you were born, you should be able to do that. So you know, I'm arguing that not just the towns and the cities, but we should be building up the hamlets. We should be looking at Tullykine. We should be looking at Roscal. You know, where there's community schools that have been around, where there's small community schools that have been struggling, and build up those local communities. Everybody should be able to live in their local area where they're going, but not necessarily the one-off houses. I mean, you asked a question just before we came on here about backland development. Mm. But then we end up, you know, when we grant backland development, et cetera, we end up problems of having to extend the roads to maintain those houses over in a decade or two's time. And then we end up where we are at the moment. You know, we have 25 kilometres of road per person in Ireland. You know, the next highest in Europe is 8 in the UK. So we've got over three times more roads, and we spend all of our time repairing those roads, and all of our money suspending all of those roads. And so our councils are not building out, you know, the service sites, and not making it possible for people to live in the local area.
But can people not just live where they want to live? Is the point that Councillor O'Curran is making, that if you want to live in your family's land that you've had for generations, should you not have the right to live there?
But then, you know, when we do that, we end up making it impossible. You know, we need to understand the consequences of this. A small amount of this is possible, and we will always have people who have a rural need, who have an actual need to live on the site. Farmers, for example. I have adult children now. Because I grew up in we built a house in Moycullen, they grew up in Moycullen. They can now claim a rural need, and build a one-off house in around where we are. One's a programmer, another one's a midwife. You know, they get a rural need, but my cow Madge nieces can't move from Kildare to and sustain farming
so
in the area.
Would you be okay with one-off dispersed rural housing if they're farmers that are in the house?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, what for a small number that we can support.
What do you think of that point, Councillor O'Curran?
I think that if you mentioned backland development there, backland is where it's in my own area in Fore Míle from Barna Village out. But like there are developments going on within certain areas in Barna since the sewerage came in. And once the sewerage system came in, Barna was never going to be the same again, because I think down the road, Barna and probably on, none of us had seen, Torspiddle will be part of Galway City in time to come. So I don't believe that people, if I apply for planning permission on my own land, and whether it's backland or not, what is mean by backland? If a road is put through, there was nothing anywhere ever until it was done. Like, if you put road through backlands, I've seen it in places, you are going to have, you cannot just build along by the side of the road. If you put roads in backlands, it's a wilderness, and it's a place for dumping and so on, antisocial behaviour and all that. But if you have the half-acre sites, years ago, we fought for the half-acre site, and I still stand by that today. And if they stood by the half-acre sites, you wouldn't have the big developments that you have in places like Barn or Moycullen.
OK, we'll have to leave it there for today, but Councillor Tomás O'Curran Sinn Féin and Councillor Alistair McKinstry of the Green Party, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks. What are your thoughts? Get them into us straight away to our text and WhatsApp number, phone interception and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. We're coming back and we're speaking with an MEP candidate for Independent Ireland next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. If you want to get a comment in, do so straight away. We have a lot coming in from that last debate we had. We'll get to them after 10 o'clock. Just to check a few of them before we read them out. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by MEP candidate for Independent Ireland, Kieran Mullooly. Kieran, good morning.
Good morning, John, and good morning to your listeners.
A lot of people and a lot of our listeners would know you from your time in RTE as a correspondent.
Why did you decide to get into politics, and why did you decide to run for Independent Ireland?
Well, firstly, John, congrats on your new gig. Mr. Finnegan is I wish him well with his retirement. I suppose people will know that I worked on RTE for over 25 years, but a lot of people in Galway will also know I've been in community development for 25 years. Mm. Worked in things like, say, Tidy Towns, the Lions Clubs, worked on suicide prevention there, worked on sports projects. And since I retired from RTE, I've worked specifically in tourism, which I know is close to the hearts and minds of people in Galway as well.
Yeah.
And every time I came across a funding project, inevitably I came across a problem. And you know what? When you trace back a problem, I'm one of these practical people, say, where did this rule come from? You know what? Most of the rules come from Europe. Now, 80% of our legislation in the Dáil now comes from Europe. And every time I run into an obstacle, let it be for a community centre project or for a new boat, for instance, we have an Access for All boat project in the Midlands for people with disability. Things like state aid come up. And say, what the hell is state aid? State aid is a rule made by Europe with regard to competition. Mm. And the more I got into it, the more it frustrated me. And then Michael Fitzmaurice came down the road and said, well, you know, stop giving out about it to me. Go and get up of your backside and go off and see if you can do something about it in Europe. So that's genuinely how it happened.
But why Independent Ireland?
The very, very straightforward reason. I think when I talked to Keith some months back here on the programme, I said pretty clearly I didn't want to go party politics. And genuinely, that was my stance. Independent Ireland have a different view of it. Very straightforward. No whip. There's no party whip in the organisation. So when I spoke to Fitzmaurice and others, I said, well, I have a view, strong view, say, with regard to, say, transport or maybe something like the Western Rail Card or something like that in this region. Will I be able to vote in my own way, my own decision? He said, you will. There won't be a party whip. You won't be instructed to follow a vote in Europe.
Does that weaken the party, though?
I think it depends how it works out. Inevitably, you know, here at home, if Independent Ireland are going to be involved, say, in the next government, there's going to be a programme for government. Mm. Then TDs and senators or other members at home, certainly, will have to sign up to something. You can't be on the fence all your life, you know, on things. So it's a problem there. But in terms of Europe, it's straightforward for me because I have to go into a grouping in Brussels, if I'm lucky, to get there, if the public vote me through. I have to find allies. And I have to follow, I suppose, particular subject. Now, I could be voting across different platforms again. So I think there it gives me freedom to some extent, you know?
A big issue that's going to be up in all the elections, whether it be local, European, or indeed the general election, is the issue of migration. And I know a lot of councillors and candidates running for Independent Ireland have been very vocal on that. What's your view?
Very straightforward, John. I worked for Roscommon Leader Partnership for the last 3 years, and I've been involved heavily in the project working with the Ukrainian community. So in the middle of the conflict, I was one of the people who came together with the team. We took out an old refurbished property called Dunamin Castle, turned it into a state-of-the-art piece for a place for 70 families to live. I am personally a big fan of integration in the community, and that's what I've done. I have to tell you, this situation is changing rapidly. The key to our success in that project in Roscommon was consultation with the locals. We went and spoke to the people in Dunamin and said, we're going to take an empty building and put 70 families in there. They embraced the project. They saw it as development. The problem, John, is where, and we've seen this in the West, where overnight people turn up without any consultation and just walk into a facility that has been lying idle and without any effort to engage with local people. I'm in favour of integration of the people of Ukraine and international protection applicants in suitable locations, but only where people have been consulted in the community.
Would you agree with the likes of Councillor Seamus Walsh in that if an arson attack happens on a property, that it's down to senseless policy of the government?
No, I don't. My view is that we all have to take a responsible view of the overall situation. We must obey the law. The end of the day, there is no Ciarán Mullooly will have nothing to do with any initiative where the law has not been followed. We must have consultation. We must sit down with people and work out a plan. Listen, I think it's going to change, John, as well, because I understand from my own context that more people from Ukraine left Dublin Airport going home or elsewhere last week than actually came in. So I think that the Ukrainian situation is going to change at the moment. I think the international protection one will continue. But when you think of the number of buildings lying idle, government buildings here in Galway, when you drive in even past Merlin Park and you go past and you look at it, I know a lot of it is full out there, but a lot of the other government premises, you say to yourself, why have we not attacked those buildings and given opportunity for families to restart their life there?
Okay. Another MEP candidate, a Fianna Fáil candidate, Senator Niall Blaney, has looked for you to clarify your position on the nitrates derogation, because he says the view taken by a number of the Independent Irish MEPs has been disappointing.
Yeah, well, Niall's is entitled to his own opinion. My opinion is based on my own background. I was involved, I'm coming from a farm in on the Roscommon Longford border. My dad had over 20 cows. We were small farming operators. The whole situation has changed dramatically over the last number of years. When Michael Fitzmaurice came to me and asked me,
do you support or oppose the nitrates derogation?
We have a realistic view to it. We think that the actual nitrates derogation is gone. We actually believe it's gone. We believe there's no point in MEPs and candidates coming on saying, let's save it, let's get it back. It's gone. As far as we're concerned, it's gone. And our view is as follows, that we must look and prepare for the derogation coming down from 220 back to 180. It's on the cards, unfortunately. But we must prepare for that with farmers. We have to support the farming community. In terms, they're going to have to deal with the situation of trying to get extra land, trying to change their farming methods. And there are ways of doing it. And this is crucial to us. Mm. We must look instead at the science involved in this. It's a bit like the issue about, you know, the culling of the national herd. Too much focus has been put on killing cows. More should be put on the science of dealing with the situation. You can change the diet of animals. You can change farming practices. Mm. You know, at the end of the day, I think a lot of farmers are annoyed that they're being the finger's being pointed at them. It's your fault. Okay. They're trying to work a solution here, and that's our opinion as well.
Should you get elected for the Midlands Northwest constituency in Europe, what parties are you looking to in the European Parliament to get in with?
Straight up answer, I'm looking at Renew as a party that I would be interested in going for. But you know what? Over the last few months, I ran into people like Marion Harkins, the former MEP, and Marion was the first person to say to me, she says, Kieran, you've got to be very careful. You're going to have to negotiate, if you get in there, to get on the top committees. So she said, you talk to everybody. You talk to everybody, but you'll be looking to get on that Environment Committee. You want to get on the Agriculture Committee. So that's what when I go in, I'll have an open mind. But personally, and I've already, you know, spoken about this with my colleagues, Renew is the party that seems to me to be that centrist area that I'm interested in.
If you could pick one piece of European legislation to get rid of and work to get rid of when you get in, which piece is it?
I think it would be the so-called emergency clause in the Habitats Directive.
Okay.
We've seen an appalling situation in County Roscommon where a family at Loch Funchina have been stranded, put out of houses, they're losing their livelihood and nothing can be done. The Roscommon County Manager read the directive, read the emergency clause. He thought he could go and put a pipe from that area to the Shannon. This is an eminent county public official. They started the project with government approval. And you know what? Our courts, and leading with European law as well, came back and said, no, that's not an emergency. The fact that people are losing their home is not an emergency. I think that's appalling, and that emergency legislation has to be changed.
Do you have any ambition of running for the Dáil at any stage if this goes well for you?
Straight up answer for you, no. Yet again, John. I tell you why, because this has come up over the years. When you sit down to look at community development, like I'm going out this afternoon, for instance, to here in Ballyband, to the Skull Enterprise Centre, I'm going to speak to some of the people there. Mm. The world we live in is based on rules and regulations that come from Europe. It's not necessarily from the Dáil at all. And I want to roll up my sleeves at that level, get in there, see what I can do. You know, you mentioned planning in the last couple of hours as well. There are new initiatives on planning coming down the line in Europe as well. There's going to be a new just transition bill for the Midlands and the Northwest coming. Mm. So I think all of those principal laws are actually made in Europe, and that's where I'm going to concentrate my attention. Michael Fitzmaurice, I think the people of Galway know what he's done and his record very well. He will be in the Dáil. I will be the link to Europe. He will be the person hopefully going into government, I hope, after the next election and speaking up for farmers and the rural community, and I will do the very same thing in Brussels.
Kieran Mullooly, Independent Ireland MEP candidate. Thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thank you very much.
Still to come on the programme today, we've lots on it. We're going to be looking at the extension to the development levy waiver, and as well as that, the new name for the pedestrian bridge, Dhrithid an Dóchas. We'll be discussing that with Councillor Frank Fahey, and he's looking for some safety measures to be put on it. So all the pizzazzats more coming up after news.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.